Hello?
Listener Rob, how are you?
Oh, I'm okay. How are you?
Awesome.
Yeah, sorry about that.
A lot
of things got shifted around today somehow, so I kind of lost track, and plus I was on vacation last week, so you know how that is. And I was unplugged as a person could be. No access to internet or Wi-Fi or phone.
Where are you?
I was in Idaho at a dude ranch.
Oh, that's such a good idea.
Yeah, it was so much fun, and I expected that I would have Wi-Fi, so I told everybody I'm unplugging for the week, but thought, oh, I'll check in every day in the morning like I usually do. Time difference will make it so that I'm up really early anyway. And then the Wi-Fi was not really accessible, so it didn't happen, and it was great.
So did they have it at the bunk main house or nowhere?
They had one at the main house, but the it was really, really, really slow. And if you weren't the only one in the room, then you couldn't get on, or you kept getting kicked off. So there was one guy there who had his own insurance adjustment company who was in there every day at like 5 in the morning. And he would be there until the first event of the day started. And so between that and some of the kids playing their games, it was very hard to get on. So yeah. I got on the first day, and I got on like the fourth day, and that was really it. But I did realize, you know, it's better to just let it go.
No cell service. Oh,
no. No cell service. You could get cell service if you had your phone in your carry pack on your horse, and we would ride to the top of the mountain. Then you'd start hearing ping, 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 because you know you'd get all your texts and whatever. But I didn't do that. I didn't take it with me. So
you're great. I fish in Idaho.
Okay.
Place called Lost Valley, it's not Lost, a place called Three Rivers Ranch.
Okay.
In Warm River, Idaho. It's up north of, it's almost to Yellowstone. It's on
okay.
the road to Yellowstone. It's very close to the Tetons and,
beautiful.
On the west side. Yeah, it's gorgeous. And it's the same thing. At the ranch, you have no cell. You got one internet provider at the building, that, you know, and it's the same thing. It sounds all right. I think they've got
yeah.
into a commitment to not give people a chance to waste their day being online.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. I mean, usually we've done a trip, you know, into a country where Wi-Fi is abundant. But day trips are usually in places where you don't have access. So, you know, Sri Lanka, the Maldives and Africa and places like that. So I usually have it, and I told Janet when she started working with me, I said, there's usually one or 2 weeks when I am totally unplugged. And I hadn't done it in a couple of years because I didn't have things kind of in a comfort level here that I felt comfortable doing that. So so it was nice to be able to do that.
It's really nice. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And, you know, we've been moving along here, doing our regular Supernova stuff, trying to get back in the swing of things. A lot of people, I think, were kind of happy that I was away. Because they didn't have to, they didn't feel obligated. I was supposed to have a call with a client today who emailed me and said, wait, I thought we had August off because you were traveling.
You said, yes, we do.
Yes, exactly. I said, whatever you're comfortable with, if you want to reschedule the call, that's fine. If you want to have it next month, that's fine. Just want to make sure that we're in touch.
That's a crazy idea. What do you think of that idea, having August off?
I think it's a great idea. I mean, I think a lot of people would be happy if I said that. So, it's not a bad idea.
You know, obviously, if there's a market, a big change, I'm going to call you. But otherwise, we have August off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that idea. I like that. I'm writing it down. August off, ? Yeah, especially because a lot of my clients are New Yorkers who have their houses in the Hamptons, and, you know, that's where they are. And if they talk to me, they just want to chat. You know, it's not anything serious. Everybody's pretty much taking a vacation at some point during the month. So there's that as well. So, yeah, I think it's probably not a bad idea. So I'm trying to think of, I haven't really made, usually I have some notes for our call about things that we've come across, Janet and I. Let's see. Well, I mean, when I came back, one of the topics was that it was time to get back to really focusing on building the pipeline. I have my pipeline tracking, you know, spreadsheet. And if things work out, I should meet my goals for the year. But as we know, you can't have it where your pipeline will meet the goals. You have to exceed the goals in order to actually meet them. So I'm feeling a little bit, I'm feeling that I need to work a little harder at acquiring new prospects. And so Janet and I talked about what does that look like. A big part of it is, and I commended her because I feel comfortable doing it, is getting me out of the office, because I've had a couple of people come in, and one of them is still a good prospect, and one of them is now a very, very good client, but that's rare. the advertisements are great that I've been doing, and they've brought in a client that I'm sharing with Joe, who now... Let's see. We still are expecting another million from him, and he's got 10 million with us now. So that's 5 in my court. And the 50s split that I have with Joe. And the reason that I did that with Joe is because he's mostly a bond buyer, and he likes to have the conversations and find interesting things, and he had a big portfolio of bonds that I knew Joe could speak to, so I brought him in. And then I have this other person who, he's a $7.5 million prospect who is, I believe, going to be a bond buyer, has a good, most of his money right now in cash, and I don't think he's comfortable with the stock market, so I brought Joe in for that as well, and we've been going back and forth. He's come into the office to meet with me twice. So I was told by Joe when I got back that Janet she has the paperwork ready for him, and hopefully he'll bring in $2.5 million, but I don't even like to say it out loud. So there's that. Those are two that called based on my advertisements.
That's really good.
Yeah. So I switched. There are a couple of magazines in Miami. I slowly moved from one that was a little bit too young in the demographic to one that was a little more sophisticated, and that has really helped. And then I've been asking for more from them because, you know, as my friend who's retired from that industry said, they can do anything, but they're not going to offer it. You have to ask them for it. So I've had a couple of articles published, and I'm asking for another one. Janet called and said, look, is there any way that you can get an article written about Me's News? She's doing her 11th marathon for her 50th birthday, and, you know, she's a woman, and she's the manager here, and, you know, there's a lot of subject matter. So they were interested and said they'd get back to her, but what I suggested that I do, which is what I did for Miami Magazine, is I'm just going to write my own article and send it to them.
Good for you.
So that's a project that I just put on my list yesterday. So that's something that I'm going to be doing. And then getting out on the golf course. I'm back to doing Thursday golf with the ladies, which has been great. You know, I haven't gotten anything from that, but I think that that's definitely great, great, great exposure. And then I'm working. It's all the way down to a 36.
Okay.
It's terrible. But nobody minds playing with me.
Okay, so here's the deal, okay? On Thursday, I want you to take a lesson.
Okay. Do you think it's important to have a better handicap?
It's much more fun for you.
Okay.
Okay, the game is a fabulous game.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't even know what the game is yet.
Yeah, okay. I mean, yeah. I don't practice enough. And I live on the golf course.
Well, take a lesson every week.
Okay.
Either before or after your round, it's up to you. If you're too tired after, fine. But the lesson before will help you warm up. Don't listen to people who say you never take a lesson before you play because it screws you up. It's fine.
Okay.
Frankly, at a 36, you're already screwed up. Okay?
I've brought it down from a 40 in 6 months. But
okay. It's a really fun game. And
yes.
Nobody takes lessons, and they're really stupid, okay?
Yeah. I was doing the ladies' clinics, and they were helping me a lot.
Yeah.
But it's summer, so they don't have them now.
You can have a lesson every week. You can afford it. It'll be good for your golf, and you will open up the world.
Okay.
Okay. So we want to get to a 14.
Okay. All right.
So you tell the pro my goal is to get down to a 14.
Okay.
All right, so you're all business. I went out.
Okay.
I went out the last two back nines I shot a 36. Okay. So, you know, I'm an 11, and I want to get down to a 7. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I won the club championship the last 2 years, and I'm gonna win it again this year. So I took a lesson about every other week all summer. Makes a huge difference. Huge.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine that because I only got a couple of clinics in last year, and it really, in my short game, they were short game clinics, and I had no short game before.
Yeah.
So I have a decent drive. My putting sucks, and I should be out there every day. Because I live on the course, putting for half an hour at least. But you know, I'm also training for a marathon, so there's that.
Yeah. So,
but I'm not writing papers anymore for school, so that's good. So I have time.
Okay, so you will do a lot of business. The better you are, the more business you'll do.
Okay.
Because people want to play with you. People want to play with you. They'll invite you to tournaments. And the better you are, the more they want you.
Okay. All right. That's on my list.
You'll have much more fun when you get better.
Yeah. I mean, I can see that. I've put my mindset in just being as relaxed as possible. And getting out there to get, you know, to get more comfortable being out on the course. But yes, I would imagine it would be more fun if I knew what I was doing.
And but keep that relaxed attitude, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When people get in trouble when they get tight and try and muscle the ball and everything, just relax. Stay relaxed.
Yeah.
Loose grip, stay relaxed. Anyway, it's a, obviously, you know, you can tell it's a passion. I know.
Yes. And I can understand why.
I went from, I'm 72, and I went from hitting a 9-iron about 110 yards to hitting it 140 yards.
Wow. Okay. Wow. I played in fundraiser for this teen golf group that's in Miami. Well, no, it's not just teens. It's young ladies. So the kids that played with us were from age 8 to 17, and the girl that I was paired with was 13, and she could drive the ball nearly 300 yards. I mean, it was ridiculous. And she said to me, like, I was hitting the ball, and one time she said, "Do you think you're standing a little too far back?" And then one time she said, "I think your club face is open." You know, so I'm thinking, oh my gosh, the 13-year-old schooling me very nicely and gently, but she sure did help me.
Did she? Great.
She absolutely did. Absolutely.
Yeah. You're an athlete. You can do this. You don't want to be where you are.
I can do it. I hear all the time from the people that I play with that if I played and if I, you know, if I practiced, that, you know, I could be a very good player, but I just haven't been practicing.
If you take the lessons, you'll want to practice more.
Yeah. Yeah,
because you're practicing what you're being taught. You're not just practicing to practice.
You're not just practicing what you don't know. It's just impossible.
Right.
It's just
practicing something that's wrong.
Right.
Get a nice Yada Pro and go out and have fun and learn the game. It's a great game. Okay.
Okay. All right. So what else am I?
How much do you spend on marketing?
A lot. Let me see where I just did my. I just worked on it's mid-year, so we have to reset our expense draw from our paychecks. And so where did I end up? Hold on one second. I think I was like at 50,000. So I would say about 7% on marketing between.
So how many dollars is that a year?
I'm trying to break it out because I have my CSA expenses in here too, and my intern expenses and stuff like that. So,
$50,000. That's good. Okay. Good. Good. Good for you.
Yeah, I remember talking to a big producer who started a team that's been very, very successful over the years, and I asked that question, how much should I be spending on marketing? And he said, you should be spending at least 5%. So I said, all right, you know, I'm just going to do it. And so I started doing these magazine articles and advertisements and stuff, and they're expensive, but I think they're totally worth it. I mean,
they last forever when you Google you.
That's true.
So See, so you people forget. Well, the ad costs this, and I had to get one article. It cost me $25,000 or $20,000 or $10,000 or something. But I googled you, and up comes this lovely article with a beautiful picture of you, professionally done. And trust me, other people I google, I can't even find them.
Well, so that was about 4 years ago. That was one of my goals, was to get on there for any philanthropic things or things I hosted and stuff like that. That was a goal. And so that's really why I started working with Ocean Drive Magazine. And I told the woman who was my rep at the time that that was my goal. I mean, no bones about it. And she helped me with that. But then I started to realize that I needed to start worrying about the demographic, and that Ocean Drive was just too young, and they didn't have money. Their parents had the money. And so I was approached by somebody who I did some, when I was on the board of the Miami Children's Museum, she was working there, and then she went to work for Miami Magazine, and then she offered me an article. And I did that, and that got a lot of accolades, but I don't think that's on Google. And then I was approached by the Miami Herald, that new magazine, Indulge. And when I looked at those demographics, I'm like, this is perfect. And then you just look at the magazine and you see what they're featuring, and I was like, this is perfect. And I've had so many people comment. I had a woman at the golf club leave me a note in my locker with a copy of it saying, I'm so proud. You know, and so, like, these things. I think I found the magazine that's beneficial. I also got the two clients that we have from it. But I was talking to one of the big real estate agents in the area, and she's she's married to a bachelor, the Bachelor Foundation. And she said, you need them to do an article on you. And if they won't do one, you tell me, and I'll call them because I'm their biggest advertiser. I spent $250,000 with them last year.
Holy
and I was like, so I just kind of dropped the name, and I asked Janet to put the request in for the ad for the article. They say they're trying to find a fit, but I realize that that's them thinking, whoa, whatever, you know, I don't know, where are we going to put her? But if I put if I give them the article, then they could probably find the fit. And then if I don't get anywhere with that, I'll call Nancy and see what she can do. Because
and do a photo shoot too.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, that's important. Yeah, definitely. And Miami did a beautiful one.
How much do you spend? How much will Miami Herald magazine cost you?
The articles? I mean the advertisements?
Yeah, what do you
think? That is $25,000.
Great. But if you get one article, it's money.
Yeah, I mean I think that I don't see why they wouldn't. Do it, and you know, I actually have more budget. So if they were to say, "Oh, we just want you to do one extra ad or something like that," I can certainly do that. I think it's worth it. The thing that I have, I think, failed in is that they have invited me to a couple of events and things like that that they really promote on their Twitter feed and LinkedIn and Instagram and stuff like that, and have not attended any of them. And I think that the problem is that I burn myself out, and then either I'm out of town or I just know that I'm not going to show well, and I just don't go because I'm just beat. So I've been better about that. You and I talked about that last call. I've been better about just being okay with, you know, like today I worked from home in the morning. You know, I get up really early, so worked from home from like 6:30 to 7:30, 8 o'clock. No, it's like 8 o'clock because my computer at home tells me every hour on the hour what time it is. I had a couple of stressful things with one of my clients, and I just wanted to get an email out to him with, you know, doing some research before doing so. So I did all that stuff at home, and usually I would be like, oh my gosh, I've got to get into the office. And I thought, Yeah, I'm still, it's not like I'm not working. And I need, and I need to just spend the time having breakfast with my son, dropping him off, and not make him feel stressed by my stress. So I've been better about that.
And that's better for you. Then you're not back at the end of the day going, I'm worried about, I'm not making anybody happy here. Me, my kids, my husband, my work, everybody's unhappy. So you gotta, you can't make everybody happy. Make yourself happy first.
Yeah, I also realized today, because I'm in the drop-off line, and in the past would have felt stressed and been like, oh my gosh, come on, da, da, you know, and then I'm not enjoying the time with my son. And not only that, but there happened to be a client in the line in front of me who jumped out of their car and came out to talk to me.
Perfect.
You know, and so if I was stressed, it would have appeared that, and I probably would have reacted in the wrong way to seeing them. I would have been like, oh my God, he's seeing me here and I should be in the office. You know, it's just stupid. It's such a stupid concept. So,
your office is where you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm in my office, right? In my house, in my workout clothes, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm working, okay? You know,
right.
The definition of work does not have to be I'm in the office.
Right.
In a suit, you know. No, I think you've got to keep that going. I don't think you want to be in workout clothes all day, every day. But I think you can have good balance in your life. And if you're seeing a client or playing golf with some gals that are going to refer you to other people, then you're working.
Yeah, and I also miss opportunities to be in front of people when I get like that.
Yep.
So, you know, going to the school and participating in parents association things, or just being on campus and meeting other parents. I think, you know, I mean, my son's school is filled with uber wealthy people. That many of them have never seen my face. So it's important for me to just like get out of this mindset of I have to be covering things at my desk, because I have people here covering things. So I'm getting better about that. But I think that that's all going to be a part of my networking and my prospecting, bringing in prospects. We also have, enthusiastically endorsed providers list.
Yes.
So that has been really fun and great. I started when I get an enthusiastically endorsed provider, as soon as I verify that it would be somebody that I would recommend, I send them a letter.
Oh.
And I tell them so. And I did that with a local periodontist, and two people went and saw him after he got that letter. He wrote me a letter, which was so nice.
Who are you sending the letter to?
I'm sending the letter to the people who I'm who I'm putting on my enthusiastically endorsed list.
To all of them? That you have
to the people that I actually would refer. So if somebody tells me that, they love... This, like, somebody mentioned this dermatologist that I personally would never send anybody to, I'm not going to send that guy a letter.
Yep.
Because it's somebody that I would actually tell people to stay away from. I'm not telling the person who told me that about him, but I have a very good friend who's in that industry and said, not a good idea to go there. All he's about is making money. He's done some really risky procedures. So I'm never going to send anybody to him because I trust my friend more than my colleague. But if it's somebody that I've verified, either I've been to or I know the person intimately who's been there, or they've gone above and beyond, or they're just, you know, there's a couple of different things, I've just verified it, then I send them a letter. So in the last month, the accountants that were referred to me by my clients, I've actually personally hired. because my accountant was in New York until this year. I sent them the letter, and I also sent them, and I tell them, you're going to be on a list. You're not, you know, I'm not saying go to this person. I give them a list so that they have the opportunity to interview you and potentially hire you. I can send you my letter. It's pretty basic.
Well, I'm still confused as to who you send the letter. You send one to the person that gets on the list.
No, I'm just sending it to the person who's on the list. I'm sending a letter to the person who I'm putting on my enthusiastically endorsed providers list. So,
okay. Here's an idea.
Yeah.
This is an idea for you. When you put a new person on the enthusiastically endorsed list, send a letter to the other people that are on your enthusiastically endorsed list that you've got a new partner.
Oh, that's another one. That's great.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's great. I love it.
No. Now, so, I want you you to have a holiday party for these people.
Okay.
And their spouses.
Okay. Awesome.
Well, you got to have it done by then.
Okay. Absolutely. Sounds great. Love it.
Now, one of the groups that is really gets this are orthopedic surgeons. Well, they do. They get it too. But orthodontists.
No, my husband does not get it. But, yeah. No, I'm just kidding. He does. He's an orthopedic surgeon. Orthodontist, which I will be with my son getting braces at our new orthodontist on Friday.
Right. I'm wrong about what I said. They do get it, but oral surgeons, okay? They have to be referred by another dentist, usually. I mean, nobody goes to an oral surgeon directly.
Right.
They always go through a dentist, okay? So these guys live and die by introductions. So find the best guy and put him on your list. He will love you, and he'll become a client.
Okay, so that's great because right now on my list is a periodontist and a dentist and an orthodontist.
Oh, this is great because these all guys all make money. They all make money.
And they all know each other.
Right. So
that's, you know, that's pretty easy because I can just speak with them about who they are. Yeah, I will do that for sure.
Who do you refer to, right? We want to get this circle complete.
So what I'm doing next week is I'm having a lunch with one of my a Citibank mortgage broker who only does jumbo, who just moved to the area from New York, a real estate attorney, and a real estate agent.
Wow.
So that I can introduce them to this guy who just moved to town, who contacted me after seeing my ad.
So is this going to be kind of a mastermind group in the making?
It could be, yeah.
Yeah.
It could be.
Real estate mastermind group.
Yep.
Okay. Now, one of the things to do if you interview this guy, if you like him, if you trust him, do a thorough interview.
I did. I did. Before I did this, I had coffee with him, and it was really wild because there were so many synergies.
Okay, so this guy can be on your list, then.
Yeah.
Enthusiastically endorsed professional. Now, you can give him the name. You can give him the list then if he's new to town.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is your present to him. The list with their phone numbers.
Okay.
And when you get it done, think about how good that would be. So think of a mom moving to town, right? Mm-hmm. And she needs everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's a CEO of a company, or he's a CEO, or he's a big guy, she's a big gal. They don't have time. Getting this list is a miracle. But you don't give the list to jerks. That's the rule.
No.
No jerks on the list. You don't give it to any jerks. It's only nice people doing business. Givers giving names to givers.
Yep.
Wonderful. I'm very proud of you. I tell this idea over and over and over, frankly, as you know, like all good things, very few people actually use it.
Well, there's a woman in Naples who's, who I was on the the FA Council with for a little while, and she always would tell us that her success came from being a connector. And I've heard that many, many times. And I remember thinking, you know, she's a connector in Naples. Like, I'm in Miami. Miami's a very big connector city for international, but not necessarily domestic. But there's got to be a way. Like, you know, there's got to be a way. And then I remember talking to somebody from New York about it, and they were like, they said, well, you know, here it's easy to just do it kind of by neighborhood or borough. And then somebody from out in the Midwest said, well, it's easy. I mean, I know everybody in town. You know, well, okay, your town is like 1,200 people, so that's not hard. But I couldn't figure out, how do I do this? Like, how do I become? So when you told me about doing this enthusiastically endorsed list, everybody was pretty gung-ho about it. And then I found that, you know, okay, this is great. I'm putting people on this list, and yes, I am referring people to these people, but they don't know that I'm doing that. And I don't know if somebody's going to go there and say that I refer them or not. So I said, well, I'm just going to write a letter and tell them I'm doing it. What's wrong with that? And I tell them, you know, that I'm kind of hoping for the same, that one day that they would enthusiastically endorse me.
You know how we take these ideas just like you have today? It's called stair-stepping. I have a good idea. I give it to you. You take it. Let's send a letter. Okay. And then I say, okay, why don't you, you know, do this and then this and then this. And then you go, oh, I'll do this too. That's called stair-stepping. You stair-step your way up with someone else, and creativity just moves the idea forward very fast.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's what your mastermind group can do.
Okay.
A room full of like-minded people can stair-step ideas like crazy. So here's a multiple on your idea. A multiply. So in your folder, you have a sheet of paper for you and for the client, which is introductions given and received.
Yeah.
Okay, and we don't do anything with that. All right, so here's what we're going to do with it. Same as you said, send a letter. The guy says, well, let's send a letter to everybody on the list. Oh, good. That's a great idea. That's a multiple. So now what we're going to do is we're going to put down the date of the introduction and then the date that you opened the account. And then what we're going to do is on our monthly call, on the agenda for our clients, we're going to put down the date and the month that they opened the account. All right. So on the, just to remind you, this is the 1 year anniversary of when you opened your account. I just want to thank you for the confidence you placed in me. So it's an agenda item for the client. It's a nice thing to do. You don't have to make an extra call, and it's going to be taken care of every year. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Now, for the person that introduced you, the referee, you're going to call them, and you're going to thank them profusely for the introduction. Let them know that it's worked out really well. Confidentiality precludes me from saying too much, but I will tell you that, you know, Tim Burns is very happy with the work that that we're doing together. And I just want to let you know and tell you how appreciative I am of the confidence that you had in me to introduce us. And then shut up. What you're going to do, see, you've made two people happy now.
Yep.
You've made the client happy, and you've made Jim Burns happy. Okay? So the idea is that you continue. So now you shut up, and they go. And I would say, you do the statistics for me. My guess is 30% of the time they're going to say, you know what? I've got another guy for you.
Hmm.
So you're going to get an introduction without asking.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, if they don't, and they just say, well, that's wonderful, I'm glad, and you just simply say, you know, we're going to be taking on a couple new families this year in my practice, and you think of someone else that you think would be a good fit for us, please let me know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yep.
That's right.
Yep.
Leave it at that, right?
Love it, yeah.
Absolutely. All right, so that's just a have to across the board. Now, you can go back to all the clients, every client that you have, and figure out who they introduced you to.
Yes, and I like the anniversary date idea.
Yep, the anniversary date and doing it on the month that the anniversary falls and your regular monthly calls makes it a no-brainer.
Yep.
Makes no extra work. If you want to make an extra call, God bless you. Make an extra call. But, and you could get an introduction from them for that call. That's
yes.
up to you. Okay?
Yes.
That's up to you. But this is the key. The call the client that introduced you.
Right.
Thank you. That's the one that is going to get you more introductions because you're...
Because they obviously are somebody that introduces.
That's right. They're already in the business of introducing you. They're possibly a center of influence.
Yep.
And you're reinforcing that behavior.
Well, I like that psychological statement, but it's true.
It's a wonderful thing.
It's the truth.
Right.
Right.
So then, you see how we take these ideas? But here's the key mission, though. You got to do something with it, right? When
yep.
I coach people and they don't do anything with it, I can't go anywhere.
Right.
I'm stuck here, right? You're in the battle. You're trying out the equipment. You got to tell me whether it works or not.
Well,
and it worked, but this worked better. Or this, I took, yeah, it worked up to this point, but then I sent a letter. And that worked great. And I got two referrals from it, or I got people thanking me, or whatever. Okay? So that's the key for us, working together, is to go, you love the enthusiastically endorsement. This works perfectly with that, and it activates that piece of paper in your folder, which was lifeless before.
Yes, absolutely.
It was a lifeless piece of paper.
Yeah, and we were putting it on the agenda to collect additional names, but I didn't feel like it was being productive.
Right.
So.
You didn't see where it was going. You didn't.
Right.
You didn't get the clients reinforcing it.
Right. And I wasn't creating centers of influence with the referred people because.
Right.
I wasn't. Yeah. Really making contact. So, yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. I got
it. No, I don't think, you know, I went back to, and I have a sheet for you, and Mike Ross, we agree that Mike probably isn't a good fit. He just is too...
You and Mike agreed?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, he...
Or you agreed?
I agree.
Because Mike does not see it that way.
Really?
Really.
Isn't that the most bizarre thing? I thought he was done. I would say, you know what? This guy doesn't value coaching. He's not interested in changing. He has no interest in this.
No. I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't jump to that conclusion. I can see how you think that. I can absolutely see how you think that because that's his persona. he always acts like he knows better than you.
Right.
And he is never going to listen to you. But listen, the way I became friendly with Mike, and believe me, I wouldn't be his friend, but as far as a colleague goes, you know, was when I walked up to him after he, you know, he founded this, the CPM Academy, the Certified Portfolio Manager Academy with Columbia. And I was, and after the class that I, and, this, and completing the certification in New York, I walked up to him and said, hey, you know, if you ever need help, I want to make sure the certification is successful. I'm willing to help. And his response was like you probably got, like, yeah, I don't need you.
Well said.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he called me. I did get on the board for a little while, and then I decided to go back to school, so I dropped off the board but didn't tell him that was the reason. But I mean, he's been calling me ever since, trying to get me to come back. So, you know, it's just interesting that is the way he is. But he called me after his conversation with you and said that he's very interested in this, that he knows that he needs help, but right now he's juggling the summer months because he's dealing with the dissolution of his partnership, and his wife has decided she lives in Colorado because they have a house in Colorado and a house in California. And so it's been something he's getting used to is the, do I live in California or do I live in Colorado? And so he went into this whole thing about that, which I don't totally understand. His wife is wonderful, by the way. But he said, you know, I just need to wrap my brain about where I'm going and what I'm doing and how, what I need help with. And then I'll be back in touch. But if you could just, you know, to me, because I think he felt like, and I told him, you have no obligation to me here. I just, you and I were talking. I told you about my successes with this program, and you were telling me your issues, and I was saying, well, it's probably a good match. He does believe that what he needs is more of your coaching skills than your organizational skills.
Roger. That was clear. And he asked me if I could do that. And as you can tell from what we've done ever since we did these, once I get you organized, then that's when my skills really start. You know,
Yeah. Anybody
can teach the other. I have other coaches Yeah. Teaching all the other stuff. Supernova is easy to coach, but it's the creativity and the left, you know, where do we go from here stuff that, or I've got this problem with my CA, or I've got this problem, or I've got that problem. You know, after 44 years, I've seen about everything, so I can help.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And so I think his personality and his tone is different from where he's going and what he values.
I've seen that.
Think he's always had the attitude that you have to prove yourself to me before I have to prove myself to you. So, you know, like he'll tell me when I was enrolled in the course for ACPM, and it was in its infancy, it was the second class they ever had, and I had just had a baby, the financial crisis hit, my husband was living in Atlanta, and I called him and I said, can I defer? I don't think I'm going to be able to complete it in time. And he said, no. Well, okay, I finished, you know, but I laughed because he laughed now because he said, why didn't you ask me again? I would have said yes. And I said, well, the way you come across is so, like, I thought you were the biggest ass. You were like, no. And I was like, well, I spent $7,500 on this. I'm going to complete it. Like, I don't care what it takes. And so I completed it. He's like, yeah, I know, but I knew you. So I knew that you could do that. You just needed me to give you a hard no. And I was like, no, that's just the way you are. And he goes, and he laughed. He's like, yeah, actually, that is just the way I am. You know, he just comes across that way. But he really does value, like, then when we went on the board and I said in the board meeting, you know, there should be some kind of way, because you have people like myself who enroll mid-term, and then you give them much less time to complete the coursework than than the people who started at the beginning. And I don't think that you've been realistic about what the expectations are and how much time the coursework actually takes. And so some people would look at it and say, oh, it's only this many hours, I can do it. And I've had a lot of colleagues say, oh my gosh, they're kidding. Like, that's not true. You have to, if you were to pass every single exam the first time around, yes, maybe it would take just that amount of hours, but nobody does because the exams are difficult and you have to get an 80% to move on. So, yeah. You know, so it doesn't take that long. And I presented it in the board meeting and said, so I think there should be something, some way that you can extend this because everybody's, you know, in different situations and you're giving it a bad name. People are going out there and saying, well, I wouldn't do it, you know. And he right away said, good point. Let's think of what, you know, and then what they did was they said, if you get a 12-month period to complete the coursework, so you may not fall, but you don't get your certification until you complete the coursework to qualify for the on-campus work, and there's only 1 week a year that on-campus happens. So you have to wait another year, essentially, if you don't complete the coursework by that fiscal year, by that calendar year. So Mike said, fine, that's how we'll adjust. But, and of course, I gave him a hard time. You didn't do that for me, ha, ha, ha. But he's just that. He's that way. Prove it to me. And then, yeah, all day long I will. And I think when he spoke to me, because he said, what's the value you're getting out of this? And I told him. And he was like, okay, yeah, that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for somebody to kind of coach me in a singular direction rather than the way that I usually am, which is true about him, is in five different directions at one time.
Yep.
So, if you don't get along with him, I wouldn't work with him. But, you know,
I've met guys that are blustering in the front, and they're really, they actually become nice, really nice people after you get past their bluster stage.
Yeah.
So, that's where so I'll keep him on, basically keep him on the list and stand by for him to call me. Is that how we should do it when he's ready?
I wouldn't hesitate to just touch base with him.
Okay.
Yeah. He's kind of like an ADHD guy, you know?
So. All right. So I will touch base with him. What are your next steps for this?
For our coaching.
Yeah, our coaching.
What are my next step options for our coaching?
I'm just talking about today. I'm not talking long.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I mean, you know, right now I'm really I want to outline a more formalized in writing plan of action for building my pipeline. That's the main thing. And then I want to put into place, you know, the things we talked about today with the enthusiastically endorsed providers, because I think that really is where the pipeline can come from. Golf, I definitely am going to do that because I think that's kind of, I call it prospecting light, you know.
It's
like passive prospecting in a way. And I've definitely got to just get myself out there more. But right now, when I look at my numbers, I really wanted to do, $10 million in new assets, and I'm almost at 6. And my pipeline, I have a pipeline of about 31 in potential, but the reality of what I think I can get is about 6.5 of that.
Yeah.
So, and you know, I want to get it within a year, and that also, I think about that and I'm like, oh, I don't know, maybe that's more like 5. So I need to have a bigger pipeline.
Right.
And so that's really going to be my focus because I think the service aspect of things is good. I also really want to be able to fire large clients if I want to fire them and not feel like I'm at their mercy. because I have the one client who has all the money at UBS who, we did a whole restructuring of his portfolio based on him wanting to have me treat him more like an institution than an individual. And it's 10 days in, he calls me and says, "You're underperforming."
What?
We're not even done restructuring. And he's been my client for 15 years. And I sat down with him in New York and I said, face to face, a couple of months ago, I said, "Why do you work with me? You don't want to bring more money to me. You don't take money away. You don't totally trust my advice. You're always questioning it. So why do you still work with me?" And he said, "Because you've proven me wrong so many times. And I remember that." And I was like, "Okay, that's great. Move on." You know, and then we just went on. But I believe in what we did. And I emailed him. That's what I was doing at home this morning. He was saying, "You have so many, stocks now, it's almost like an index." I said, "No. If you had 2,200 stocks, then it would be like an index. But, you know, you have 300. And I said, "I believe in what we're doing. We are restructuring the allocation so that you are more diversified. We're bringing down the risk. And I believe in it. But we're not going to prove that this is the way to go in 10 days. This is a long time horizon plan."
And you said, "I've proved you wrong in the past. I'm going to prove you wrong again. So let me do my job."
Right.
Okay, so remember this. Keep that written on the top of this page. The reason I do business with it is because you proved me wrong so many times. So just bring him back to that. Bring him back to that.
Okay.
Okay.
I will. So while I was away, he sent me several emails that, you know, question things. And then I said, I got his emails on Saturday evening when I landed. And I sent him back an email and said, "I'm still out of town. I will call you Monday." And he sent back an email, "I will be out of town Monday. We'll call you Tuesday or Wednesday." He's one of those where he's got to have the last word. And so I said, "You know, it's fine." He hasn't called me. So that's why today I said, "I'm going to send him an email response because I do not want to be accused of not responding."
Sure.
So that's out there. But when I came back, I said to Janet, he's only a $5 million client. It's replaceable, but I want to be in the position where this won't matter to me anymore. Because he's either going to become a bigger client, and he can, and the other thing is, he gets solicited by everybody, as you can imagine. You know, he's got $60 million at UBS, so he gets solicited by everybody. And I did mention in the email, he called me because a Merrill Lynch advisor, and I believe a fairly new advisor, was pitching him on an annuity.
Oh, no.
He went back and forth and back and forth. He would send me the pitch and say, "What do you think?" And anyway, long and short is, and his advisor, who I'm very friendly with, was telling him no. So his kind of life coach guy, "Are you kidding?" And he came from Ernst & Young, so he's knowledgeable in the field. But he was like, "What? Are you kidding?" So anyway, so that happened. And so in my email today, I said, and ultimately it turned out that the guy was seated in New Jersey, not realizing that it wasn't a New York approved product. But the bottom line was, he was ready to do it. So I wrote, "You know, I understand you're being solicited by Merrill Lynch. Please take caution about working with somebody who doesn't even realize the product that they spent weeks soliciting you on does not exist in your state, and with good reason, because New York is very particular about what annuities they allow in the state."
There you go. Okay.
You're wrong again.
Right. There you go. And you can say that. Say that to them.
Yeah.
Okay. Say it to them. I'm serious. And once again, what did he say about you, that he likes you because you proved him wrong so many times?
And he remembers that.
Right. Just say, again, let's put this one on our list.
My husband says he's completely crazy. You know that. He said to me, he's crazy. You know that.
I like your husband already. All right.
All right. Well, thank you.
It's been very helpful for me as a coach. Okay? Thank you.
Well,
giving me good ideas. And I hope I return a few for you.
You absolutely. Thank you. I'm looking forward to putting some of this into play.
Yes.
Thank you. All right. Talk soon. Bye.